Hello, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Mark your calendars for Fetch Long Beach happening this December 6th through the 8th. Join us for 3 days of top-tier veterinarian continuing education, all while soaking in the California sunshine. At Fetch Long Beach, our attendees come first. That's why we offer personalized learning opportunities, complimentary meals, and a dedicated staff ready to support you every step of the way. So if you are looking for that perfect year-end CE opportunity, Fetch Long Beach is the place to be.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Well, it's National Pet Cancer Awareness Month, and I can't think of a wonderful friend and colleague to talk to us further about cancer awareness in our patients with the one and only board certified veterinary oncologist, Dr. Sue Ettinger. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm so good and so happy to be here with you.
Oh, I know. So happy to say it's been a while since we've connected, and I'm so glad. I know you're so busy. Everybody is, but it's nice to kind of stop for a little moment, take some time to chat about something that we're all passionate about in this profession.
And you know that cancer awareness is my thing. And I know, you know, that's what actually got me started in social media back in the day, where, you know, pre-Instagram was raising awareness with pet owners and our veterinary colleagues. So this is near and dear to me. So I'm happy to be here.
We're so glad that you're here too. Thank you for sharing that. Well, if you do not know who Dr. Sue Ettinger is, she is a practicing veterinary cancer specialist. She's at Guardian Vet Specialist in Brewster, New York, international speaker, speaker of the year at Western Veterinary Conference, book author, YouTube vlogger, over 50,000 followers on social media, educating both us, the veterinary professionals, and as well as many of our clients and pet parents out there. So thank you for all the great work you do, by the way. It's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, but it's, when you love what you do, it makes it a little bit easier, right?
Yeah, right. That's true. It really is. So, you know, it's National Pet Cancer Awareness Month. And, you know, I think one of the things that we want to chat about is, let's start more about the whole triad of care that happens between us, the general practitioner, you, the veterinary oncologist, those that are tuning in. What does that look like to you? And are there any tips that you can give us when we're referring cases over to the oncologist?
Yeah, I think it's so important. You know, when I lecture and when I talk to other veterinary professionals, I say the GP, you're in the trenches. You're the one finding the cancer, whether you're making the diagnosis or you're suspicious of, you know, the bone lesion on radiographs. And not only are you trying to work these cases up, you're trying to deal with breaking bad news to the owner. So there's so much going on, but how you break that news, how you talk about with the owners is going to make or break in a lot of ways, whether or not they're either interested in treating their pets for cancer or doing a further workup. So just one, a huge shout out and thank you to the GPs for being on the front lines, because that's so important, you know, for raising cancer awareness and finding the cancer. In terms of when you're thinking about referring the case, and it's going to vary a little bit by what oncologist you're working with in your area. So I think the most important part is, you know, meeting them, whether it's either on the phone or at a local VMA conference, and having that good relationship, and then finding out, because I'm really happy if the GP wants to do the radiographs before they send it over. If they want to do an ultrasound, sometimes there's a mobile ultrasonographer who comes. I love when they have all the diagnostics right before my exam, because it makes it easier for me to talk to the owner about whether or not the cancer is metastasized. So if you are doing radiographs, I love, love, love when they get reviewed by a board certified radiologist, because I miss stuff too. So I'm not a radiologist. You're not a radiologist. Let's send those radiographs. And now it's so easy with everything digital to the radiologist. If you're going to do an ultrasound, you know, I just don't want like winnow. Like I'd like the full report and things like that. And just sort of send everything over. I think that's really helpful. There are probably some oncologists, you know, that still prefer to do the workup at their hospital. So I think just having that relationship. And then the other thing that I'd like to add is, you know, there are sometimes I'll find a lumbar bump while I'm going through lymphoma, and I'll call the owner, you know, I'll ask, right, it's a soft tissue sarcoma. I'll say, hey, do you want this case back for surgery? And they'll say, yeah. And then sometimes they'll say, no, you can have your surgeon do it. A lot of times it's less expensive if I send it back to the GP. So I think it's just, you know, I don't want GPs to think once they send it over to the oncologist, they're never going to see the case back. I'm happy to send it back. And the surgeon at my last practice, we had one GP who liked to do chemo. She was really well-trained in it, all that. So she would send stuff to our surgeon, but, you know, Bonds knew to send it back to her for chemo, and that was okay with me. But she knew that if she sent it to the surgeon, it wasn't going to mean that she was going to lose the case to me. So I think it's just having a good relationship with the oncologist, with the surgeon in your, with the internist in your area, what you're comfortable doing, or, hey, I have this really weird case. Do you want me to work it up before I get there? I think it's just having that open dialogue.
I think that
really helps.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that triad of care and triad of communication is so important for everyone, including the pet owner too. So that's fantastic. Now, I know
I just have one thing. I also just, you know, especially for me, like, you know, people think like, oh, I have to run all these diagnostics before the oncologist will even see it. It's not true. Like, you know this, but like if I'm working up a mast cell tumor case in a two-year-old, three-year-old boxer, I don't really need chest radiographs. So don't think just because you're sending it to a specialist, you have to do all the diagnostics. You can call and say, what's the most important diagnostic? And I do the same thing when I'm with the owners. I say, this is all the things we can do. But if you're working on a budget, A, B, and C are much more important than D, E, or F. And right. So again, just figuring out like, what do we really need for each case?
I like that a lot. Thank you for sharing that, because sometimes you feel like we have to do everything before we refer it over to you. So yeah, really important. So you have this wonderful motto, live longer, live well. And, you know, share your approach about this philosophy in treating pets with cancer and why it's so essential for the pet owners to understand that.
Well, I think often, you know, there's this myth and misconception. And again, that's why I got into social media years ago, was because I knew that pet owners were scared to put their pets through chemo, to torture them, to poison them. And so I always say, and I think about this every time I'm like approaching a cancer and an individual case in the room, like, with treatment, will this pet not only live longer, live well? So, you know, when we think about statistics, oncologists love statistics, right? Will the median survival time improve with no treatment versus X, Y, and Z treatment? But will these pets tolerate treatment? Because I always say, like, if they're living longer but not living well, I'm not doing my job. Luckily, as you know, most dogs and cats tolerate chemo very well, better than people. So they, in general, will tolerate it. There may be some bad days or some days that they're off, but overall, I want owners to look back and be like, yeah, my pet still had a great quality of life. We still went on walk. We still did hikes. They still watched Netflix with me in the evening, you know, whatever it is that made bear, you know, they're still able to do that as they're going through treatment. So again, it's not just improving the survival times or the disease-free interval or, you know, all the oncology terms that we like, but are they having a good quality of life? Do the good days outweigh the bad days? Because again, most people are like, they're scared to give chemo because they think, you know, they're going to be so sick the entire time. And then they realize maybe there's just a couple of off days as they're going through a CHOP protocol for chemo, you know, they're much happier. The other thing I usually say to owners, and I remind GPs to say, you know, that I say this to owners, I tell owners, if you're thinking about giving a dose, if you're thinking about doing chemo, give a dose or two, see how the vet does. And most of the time they keep coming back, you know, and they pay as they go. They can, it's not a contract. They can stop anytime you want. And then most owners who were terrified at those first appointments, they're like, can I go to Costco? And they hand me the leash. And then they're like, I'll be back in a couple hours. And I'm like, and that's just a level of how comfortable they are now leaving their pet with us for a couple hours and running errands.
Right. That's nice to hear. I'm curious to get your experience over the years. Has the perception of pets with cancer changed a little bit with the power of social media and education? Have some of those myths and misconceptions been a little bit less? Is it still as common? What's your thoughts on that?
I'm smiling as you say that, because that's a great question. And I don't know that anyone has ever answered me that. And I think, but I'm biased, right? Because so the people that follow me are either people that their pet has been diagnosed with cancer and they're going through it now. And then I have a lot of people that, because they'll tell me like either I treated or someone else treated their cancer years ago, and they're trying to be proactive with their other pets, or they're just, you know, they stay in the community. But I have a lot of people that have no pets, you know, currently going through chemo on that. And so I do feel that there is a much better awareness because of social media. But I, like I said, it's only based on the people that interact with me on my, you know, on my Instagram page and things like that. So I don't know that I know that, except for my biased opinion. But But I do, I mean, what do you think? I'm gonna, can I, am I allowed to ask you a
Yeah,
question?
absolutely. I think from just sitting in the pet parent space, I think it's definitely improved. I really do. I think people are more looking at the science behind it, the why. They're realizing it's not a selfish thing to do. They know about studies, they know about median survival times. And when I first started practicing, I did not hear that at all. Now with, I think through social media and education, I direct a lot of clients to your website, for instance, or your Facebook group. So they're aware that there's great resources there. So they're more willing and able to do it, I would say. And I'm curious to see what the listeners, if you're tuning in, like write to us. We'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well. But that's what I think.
And I think the other thing that's nice is there are plan B, plan C, and plan D options. There was a study that came out a couple of years that said that 80% of owners choose not to treat their dogs for lymphoma. And there's like this huge, and it, like it's the cost getting to an oncologist, the fear of chemotherapy, but a lot of it is the cost. So now we have less expensive options, which maybe they're not going to live quite as long, but they can still have a quality of life for, a different period of time. And so I think realizing, there's this huge unmet need for pet parents to have alternative options. And I think, we have been, not we, but the oncology, the community as a whole has been developing newer treatment options and products that, again, maybe aren't the same as a CHOP, which is, for people who don't know, the best chemotherapy protocol, right, for a dog with lymphoma. But we have other options that are going to be less expensive. And I think that's one of the things that's so exciting about oncology now is there are newer treatment options available that we didn't have 10, 15 years ago when I was, first in practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the power of veterinary medicine too, how it's growing and advancing and always evolving. So, now it is Pet Cancer Awareness Month, and big thank you to our friends at the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine for really spearheading this initiative for this month. And many primary care vets focus on educating pet owners about cancer warning signs and how can primary vets and specialists work together to, spread awareness and encourage owners to stay vigilant about signs of cancer in their pets.
The hard part is, and you know this, is that cancers of one word that covers so many different diseases. So, when we talk about the signs of cancer, they're the general signs, and you can find them, online, like the top 10 cancer. And it's everything from losing weight, which is really hard if you're not regularly getting your pet weighed, monitoring that, bloody discharges, difficulty breathing, limping or lameness, any new bumps or sores. So, those are some of the signs. So I think it is reminding owners that. And listen, GPs have a very limited time that they're spending with their clients in the exam room just because they're often, whether it's a general wellness exam or they're there for something when they're not feeling well. So I think directing them to those resources, whether they have a social media page that they can share those resources, and they don't have to reinvent them. They can find them on my site. They can find them on Moores Animal Foundation. ACVM, has wonderful resources that veterinarians can share with their clients about it. So I think it's just reminding them what the signs are. And then I think the hard part is, we're both pet parents as well. Like sometimes as a pet parent, something is off in your pet. And it, and I think as a, as a veterinarian, sometimes I'm like, it's abstract. I'm like, is that a sign? But it's like listening to the pet parent because they listen. I'm wrong sometimes about my own pet because I get really worried. Penelope was limping last week, and I was convinced she had osteosarcoma. She only limped for 2 days, but I
You
go
jump
worse.
to the
Right, but I'm saying so. Yeah. So sometimes we have to listen to the parents, trust their intuition, and sometimes we're all going to be wrong as pet parents because we worry about our pets. But it's really just the awareness, and nothing replaces getting to the GP. And from middle age and older, I know we talk about annual exams, but I'm a strong believer in twice a year exams, because a year is a really long time, and that dog comes in, right, and that 25-pound dog has gone down to 19 pounds. That's a lot of weight when you think about the perspective of it. And dogs and cats are fluffy. It's hard to, monitor that. So I just think nothing replaces really getting them into the veterinarian. And then there's, different cancer screening tests that we can do and things like that. But I think it's a combination of what are the common signs, routine health exams, and then, the different screening tests that we can do, and just, coming up with a plan like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely, twice a year would be fantastic. And, I think there's a lot more education in celebrating seniors now. So we see a lot of initiatives for gray muzzles and so forth, and things to look out for. Why wait, aspirate, all the
And it's not, for the, and that's great that you bring up, because it's, I know we're talking about cancer awareness, but there are so many other diseases that, that we see in middle age and older. And let's not forget about the cats, right? Getting our
Absolutely.
cats, because they're an underserved population in the veterinary community, just in terms of getting them to, both my cats hated going in the car. So it's stressful to bring cats to the clinic. So I think there's a lot that we can do just to encourage those regular visits.
I like that you mentioned a couple of things. You mentioned weight loss, and there's just something that just ain't right with my pet. And when we're chatting about this in the exam room and signs to look out for of things, because we get asked this all the time, like, how do I know if my pet has cancer or whatnot? Those are two big ones that you're talking about, just like things that are off physically, exam wise, not necessarily blood work or whatever. But are there any other things out there that we as veterinarians should be educating pet parents about to look out for?
Well, I mean, I think there was a study about 5 years ago that said one of the top reasons that pet owners bring their pet to the clinic is some, and it's not anorexia, it's some level of hyporexia, right? So sometimes it's complete not eating. But I also think educating owners that, like, picky eating is not normal, right? A lot of times, oh, my dog won't eat their regular food, but they'll eat chicken, so they delay bringing them in. That to me is a sign that there's probably something going on underlying. It could be pain from arthritis. It doesn't have to be cancer. So I think monitoring appetite, monitoring weight is a really important one. And it again, you can have a pet with cancer that isn't losing weight, but I feel like weight loss and decreased appetite. And I'm a big proponent of when you're coming in and you're working them up, get them on an appetite stimulant, whether it's something like Entyce for dogs or Mirataz or Allura for cats, like. While you're working up, you can put them on an appetite stimulant, while you're trying to figure out what's causing that. But, I get really frustrated when I see a case that has seen even another specialist for an appetens. They did a workup and no one sent them home with anything to help the appetite. And that frustrates me.
Yeah, I could see that because nutrition is vital. It's important for everything that we talk about.
And then I think there are the things also, like, what other signs, like, if you have a large and giant breed dog that's at risk for osteosarcoma and they're limping, like I brought up Penelope, my mutant Labrador, who's only 45 pounds. But, if you have a dog that is limping or lame and, it's one of the breeds that's at high risk for osteosarcoma, like, and the owners won't do radiographs that day, I always say get them back in a week or two. You can send them home with pain medication, but get them back in because, you have to use your spidey senses to say, like, the owner's not thinking about it, but I have this Irish wolfhound and I'm worried about, or a Great Dane, I'm worried about osteo and they won't let me take radiographs, but I'm not going to just send them home with pain meds. We're going to say, okay, we need to book a recheck. So, if you can't force an owner to do a diagnostic, but you are like, I'm really suspicious of this. Let me, before they leave, just like my dentist, before I leave, they're booking my next appointment. Let's say we're going to get you back in 2 weeks. And if the dog's not better, then we're going to revisit those radiographs. So I think, again, when we talk about cancer as a whole topic, it's hard. But, again, if you have the limping dog and it's especially in an area towards the knee, away from the elbow, and you're worried about osteosarcoma and they won't let you work it up, get the pet back in. Same thing with an aspirate, right? They won't let you aspirate it, but okay, we're going to have you come back in a month. The mass is still there. We're going to aspirate. So I think sometimes you can only do what you can do at those appointments, but we can, create a plan for when to strategize and revisit the issue and then hopefully, help them make a diagnosis.
Yeah, I love that a lot too. Thank you for sharing that. Because, sometimes you talk a little bit about incremental care. We can also do incremental diagnostics at the same time, depending on budgets or whatnot. So, excellent. Well, this has been fantastic, Dr. Sue Ettinger. Thank
That's
you
it.
for
That's all.
that's how we roll here on the Vet Blast podcast.
I love it, but I just that went so quick.
We can keep riffing. I know it's
Okay.
fantastic. Where tell the listeners where they can go to learn more about you and direct them to any resources that you have on your pages.
Yeah, so Dr. Sue Cancer Vet is my handle on, pretty much everything. So most of my stuff nowadays is coming out on Instagram. And Facebook, and I do have YouTube videos as well, so you can dive deep into lymphoma protocols and, you know, dogs, cats, all the top cancers in dogs and cats, chemotherapy safety, chemotherapy side effects. So lots of long form videos on YouTube, but most of the everyday stuff and the stories of seeing pets go through chemo and how they're tolerating it, you can follow on Instagram.
Absolutely. Thank you for posting all that information, because it really is educational. And I encourage you out
and
there.
I want to say thank you for all that you do, because you're amazing. Like, you are such a shining star in the veterinary community. And I'm not going to let this end without saying a huge shout out and thank you to you.
Thank you. That means the world to me, especially coming from Dr. Sue Ettinger. My gosh. I'm glad this is recorded. I'm going to have to play this over and over again. It'll be my morning affirmation. Love you very much too. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for all the great work you continue to do, and especially during Pet Cancer Awareness Month. To the listeners out there, hopefully this kind of gives you some ideas to noodle on to help educate your clients, your audience on social media as well, so that way we can work together to raise pet cancer awareness to everyone around. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for being here. Don't forget to rate the podcast. It helps us out as we can continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.